Listen to those big ears down there. Boy, I'll
what
tell you.
The big
nothing
voice?
Gets by. Oh, sorry. I should whisper. Okay. I'm never afraid to tell you. Quiet. You know, Mike, I'm not a very quiet person. So.
Are you supposed to be sitting there?
I changed the sign. Yeah, my name's right out here. I'll just look at it. I got it right here.
No, we're talking about.
Oh, I'll get
it.
It doesn't work yet. That was one of my things with our general manager conversation this time. We're waiting for them.
I think I have 9:30, Latrice.
No, I'm fine.
We're ready? Are we good? We're live? Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So if we could all rise for the invocation, Mr. Roger Mays will give the invocation today. Thank you, Roger.
Please stand. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are here. We dwell in the presence, in the secret place of the Most High. You are here. You will never leave us. You will never forsake us. We ask, Father God, that you would give each one vision for this ministry. And Lord, that you would expand their eyes to see the whole region, every person that they represent in whatever decisions they make. I pray that you will extend their vision to a legacy beyond today, beyond this week, beyond this year. Thank you, Father, for what you're doing. We pray that you will bless each one who have been faithful, who are faithful, and who will continue to be faithful in supernatural ways. We ask, Lord, that you would give wisdom to each one, that they will be all that you said that they are supposed to be, and that they will be fulfilling their purpose. Lord, surround us with your love, with your angels, minister to each one, and give them all that they need to accomplish everything that they're supposed to do. We give you praise and glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll move on to roll call.
Director Page?
I'm here.
Director Ramirez?
Here.
Director Cox?
Present.
Director Limbaugh?
Here.
President Raleigh?
I'm here.
And we have directors absent is Directors Hoffman and West. And we also have our legal counsel online, Steve Kennedy. And we have General Manager Adnan Anatawi and presenting staff Melody Bailey and Lauren Warham.
Thank you. Move on to item 3, approval of the agenda.
I'd like to make the motion.
Second.
Motion Page, second.
Cox.
Director Page?
Yes.
Director Ramirez?
Yes.
Director Cox?
Aye.
Director Limbaugh?
Yes.
President Raleigh?
Aye. Thank you. Latrice, do we have anybody for public participation?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to public participation. Are they online?
No, it's Mr. Jeff Gastra.
Jeff, come on up.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. Jeff Gastra, Lake Association, Newberry Springs. So I've been coming to these meetings for about 10 years or a little longer. You guys are probably getting sick of me, but I'm pretty persistent. I've made a lot of proposals, a lot of ideas, and a lot of them have gotten shot down. I'm here today because I'm going to meet with Adnan after the meeting. I'll try to pronounce your last name, Adnan, but I'm sorry, I probably can't do it. But anyways, I mentioned, I think the last meeting I was at, that maybe it's, you know, things have changed over the 10 years that I've been coming here. You know, Baja is a different place. The board are different people, different places. I think things have changed for the better in Baja. Obviously, the water level is improving on the west side of the fault. But maybe we still need a little help out there for the east side of the fault, where there's still quite a few farmers. It's been said by previous board members that, you know, agricultural farming really shouldn't be done in the desert. Neither should the lakes be in the desert. But since we're here, and Mojave has a lot more flexibility than, like, the water master to pick winners and losers, because you have to follow the court when you're on the water master board. But Mojave has some flexibility. And I hope, I'm going to be discussing with Adnan another proposal that I think is a win for everybody. It doesn't cost Mojave anything. It would hopefully alleviate some of the water use on the east side of the fault, and it would be good for us. So I just hope, you know, y'all keep an open mind, as always, and I appreciate you letting me speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate you being persistent. Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the workshop, investment advisor market update. And I believe you guys are here in person tonight.
So for our investment advisor market update today, we have Insight Investment with us, and you will notice some new faces. We have for years been familiar with Dave Whitholm. He has retired, so these are his professional colleagues, and they will be introducing themselves.
Thanks, Gary, and good morning, council members. My name is Tierno Silla. I'm a senior relationship manager at Insight based in our New York office, and I'm joined today by my colleague Mary Donovan, senior portfolio manager, who is the lead portfolio manager on your portfolio. As Carrie mentioned, Dave Whitholm has retired from Insight. He was a dear colleague of ours, and we miss him dearly. But we are excited to step in for him and take over stewardship of the assets that we've been managing on your behalf for a very long time now. So we thank you for the long-term trust and partnership in Insight, and we hope to continue to deliver the same quality of services that we have in the past. So in terms of an agenda today, on page 3, what we thought we'd do, given that we are new faces, is to just provide a reminder of who Insight is, and then transition into a discussion of the economic outlook that we have going forward into year-end and next year, and provide an update on your portfolio, thinking about how it's structured and the securities that we have in the portfolio. And if that sounds okay, So we'll start on page 5, and this page provides an overview of who Insight is as a firm, and there are kind of a few key things I want to highlight. So Insight Investment is an expert or a specialist in fixed income management. So we focus on that one asset class, and all of our resources and dedication goes to fixed income. We don't do equities, we don't do alternatives, or any of the other asset classes that are out there. And we think that gives us an edge and an ability to deliver superior outcomes and a certainty of outcomes for our clients while maintaining a focus on risk management. Insight has been investing in fixed income for over 23 years, and we have a legacy dating back 90 years with some of the predecessors that we've acquired. The company operates in six countries, over 1,100 employees, and just over $800 billion in assets under management. We are also part of the Bank of New York's platform, and the Bank of New York is a successful financial services company with a 240-year history, overseeing over $57 trillion in assets under custody and just over $2 trillion in assets under management. And the reason I talk about these figures is because these are important because they underscore kind of the resources that we have available to help you achieve your objectives of safety, liquidity, and yield. We have deep expertise working with public sector clients and agencies and have a really strong presence here in California as well as other states in the nation. And kind of we have this mentality and this team approach that's predicated on helping you achieve your objective with a high degree of certainty. And page 6 and 7 shows you all of the individuals at Insight who work on your behalf and are members of the team that you can reach out to with any questions in addition to Mary and myself. And these individuals, by the way, we've been there the whole time. Dave has been the face of Insight for you all for a number of years. And we thought we'd use this opportunity to kind of pull the curtain back a little bit more so you can see all of the other individuals who work for you. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mary to jump into the economic discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. It's really nice to have a chance to see you all in person and look forward to working with the group in the future. Starting off on our presentation information, we're going to just take a few slides, talk about the economy, the investment environment that we've been operating within, starting here with the yield curves. So we're graphing the yields on Treasury securities with different maturities as of two different points in time. For this graph, we have October 31 of 25, and then a one-year look back to 24. And the theme is just simply that interest rates have been coming down, right? So we have peaked on our two-year Treasury yield back in October of 23. And since then, things have been moving generally lower, with the Federal Reserve decreasing interest rates recently in September and October to 25 basis point moves by the Federal Reserve this year, 100 basis points of moves last year. So Federal Reserve had increased interest rates substantially and aggressively in response to inflationary concerns as we were coming out of the COVID crisis. And as that has subsided somewhat, okay, we're still not to the Fed's target of 2% inflationary conditions, but we're getting closer, and it was deemed important to be bringing those interest rates down a little bit. So it's definitely what we've seen. It's what we've been managing towards from a strategy perspective in the portfolio. We've been really single-mindedly working.
Can you bring the mic a little closer?
Oh, sure I can. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for telling me that. Okay. Do you want me to start over?
I had to start over.
Just keep going. Don't start over. I love it. Okay. So I was just going to just give you a little bit of context here with respect to portfolio strategy. And as interest rates had been peaking in that 5% level, we had single-mindedly really been working to increase the duration of the portfolio. So buying longer-term securities to lock in those higher yields for the benefit of the Mojave Water Agency in the future, right? So that was really strategically very important, and you're going to see that as we walk through some of the materials. The second graph is looking at the two-year yield and the 10-year yield graphed over a longer period of time. And really the important thing that we want to kind of draw your attention to on that graph is just simply from, you know, October of 24 forward, you're looking at an environment where the two-year yield is less than the 10-year yield. So it's a positively sloped curve. You're getting paid and compensated for extending duration in that kind of an environment. So that's a really, really good constructive environment for our fixed income portfolios. And that's something we wanted to just draw your attention to. Working into the next chart, we have some key takeaways for you. And again, the Federal Reserve is really central to our strategy for the portfolio. We're investing to a 5-year maximum maturity horizon per her investment policy and California code. So what happens with the Federal Reserve is very important for the direction of short-term interest rates. And as mentioned, they did resume their easing cycle here in the fall of 25 with 50 basis points total so far. Expectations in the market for the Fed to reduce interest rates further as we roll through the next year. So keep in mind that the thing that's moving the Fed towards getting interest rates lower has been the labor market, and concerns about deteriorating labor conditions have spurred the Fed on. So we saw that this year with respect to some softening labor conditions at the tail end of the summer, and we also saw it last year when they started their Fed easing cycle to begin with, also in response to deteriorating labor conditions. So that's really been a central theme. The inflation environment remains a little stubborn and a little bit higher than their 2% target, but it has improved quite a bit from the highs that we had seen. And we'll talk a little bit more about those two factors on the next couple of slides. The next page on the materials, we're actually one page forward to take a look at some of the employment information. So on page 11, we have a graph of job creation, and this really is a good way of illustrating how that has really flatlined. Okay, so we had been seeing some pretty strong job growth, but when we had our August payroll report come out in September, it revealed only 22,000 jobs added, and it also revealed substantial revisions to the prior months, bringing those numbers down a lot. It was a meaningful point in time for the market, and then on the heels of that, the Federal Reserve started to initiate again that second leg of the easing cycle. So the unemployment rate remains at 4.3%. It's a low unemployment rate, which is kind of deemed at this point to be a bit of a low hiring, low firing mode, but many of the metrics associated with the labor market have just simply normalized off of the COVID environment. And the concern is that we see further softening from here. And on the next page, you kind of can have another way of looking at that. We have here a graph of the job openings and the unemployed level in the United States, okay? And so these numbers have really just simply come together. So we're now running with about a 1-to-1 ratio of jobs available versus unemployed persons. And when we were in more of the period of recovery after COVID, there were 2 jobs available for every unemployed person. So it's just that movement towards a more normal labor market, but the labor market starts moving, and one has to ponder if we're going to continue moving in that direction. So a little softening on these labor market conditions is meaningful. And another really interesting metric to look at is the quits rate, the number of employed persons who are voluntarily leaving their jobs, and that number has come down substantially as well. And that really speaks to the employee's confidence level in being able to get another job that is worth leaving their current job for. And when we were coming out of COVID, you remember the whole, where did all the workers go? We can't hire anybody. Nobody's applying for the jobs. That whole environment has transformed into a more quote-unquote normal environment. So it's a pretty, really very meaningful shift. And when you, again, coming back to the Federal Reserve, because of the implication for our short-term investment portfolios, they have the dual mandate to maintain full employment and stable prices. They had been very focused on the inflation side of their mandate, but as of the last several quarters and into last year, have been turning their attention more towards the labor market. Okay, so that's a big part of what's going on. On the next page, we do have a quick look at inflation, and we're graphing here for you the core level of price increases for goods and services. And as you're looking at that, you'll notice that the services side of the economy is continuing to see some price relief, but there continues to be a little bit of an uptick on some of the goods prices. Okay, so that's something that's in response in part perhaps to some of the tariffs that are being put into place. Those are being viewed as potentially one-time price increases and not necessarily something that will lead to inflationary pressure in the future. That being said, the inflation numbers have ticked up modestly from the lows that we had seen in the spring. So the CPI, for example, was running at about 2.4% in the spring. It's now at 3%. It's not It's nowhere near the levels that we had seen when we were coming out of COVID, when the Fed was completely dedicated to fighting inflation. They have more flexibility now and have assessed that the risks in the economy are much more balanced between their inflation mandate and their employment mandate. So really a lot of change, a lot of volatility with respect to that. And really, really quite interesting. In addition to that, we have just a quick chart here on the next page where we're looking at a little bit of an uptick in some of our Chapter 11 filings. Yes.
May I ask a question on that one?
Please do.
My memory may not be correct here. Was that kept artificially low with some of the policies of the Biden administration as far as bankruptcies and things? Is that? I just remember something, maybe I'm thinking more about housing and things like that, that there were certain things that they kind of allowed where individuals weren't having to file or whatever, that things were more lenient. Hmm. Is that why it dipped so much, or am I completely off?
Are you talking then about the Chapter 11 bankruptcies?
Yes.
Okay. That big dip in 22 is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Would have been in response to some of the aftermath of the COVID environment.
So, but wasn't it some of the policies that the government now, or
I'm
maybe it's
sure
the money
I,
they
I'm
made
not
available?
Sure I can exactly say that it definitely could be from some of the money that was made available. That was a big distortion. It distorted.
Well, that's what I'm asking about. Is that it's obvious
right.
that this mm-hmm. came out of nowhere and it normalized fairly quickly.
Right. I think what I like to do on this chart is kind of like ignore the big dip in 22 and look at that longer trend. And there you just see if you just kind
it's
of...
It's going up.
It's going up. I mean, I know it's a simplistic way of looking at it, but you take out that volatility on the bottom end, you do see that there's a little bit of an uptick. And that's...
There's a few of us that need it simple. Yeah. Trust me.
All right. Well, I hope that that's helpful. There's just a lot of metrics coming out right now with respect to household debt increasing, that sort of thing. And it's not surprising given where we are in the cycle. And your comment about the monetary support that was provided by the Biden administration really enhanced wages and growth of income for folks across the economic spectrum. And that's just simply not available now, and some of the lower income folks are feeling a little bit more of the pinch than people with more economic resources at this point. Okay, so that's kind of the bottom line on that one. With respect then to the Federal Reserve, and again, this is I think one of a really important chart for us to just pause on, because when we get into looking at portfolio performance, a lot of it's going to be driven off of what we've endured over the last several years. You see, when we started in March of 22 with the Federal Reserve increasing interest rates at a historical rate and magnitude, going from basically 0% up to 5.25% to 5.5% on a range, very meaningful increase in interest rates. That had a significant impact on total return performance during that period of time. The Fed then held interest rates steady for a little bit better than a year before in 2024, bringing rates down by 100 basis points. In 2025, 50 basis points so far, expectations for another 75 basis points to follow. So the normal or quote unquote neutral level that we may be getting closer towards is probably in the range of 3%. Okay, that is what the market is pricing expectations for the Federal Reserve to continue to decrease interest rates to get back to a neutral sort of level. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen with the Federal Reserve as we have Chair Powell getting ready to retire. There's going to be changeover in governors. There's going to be some new ways of looking at things. Probably a little bit more of a dovish bent with expectations for interest rates to be coming down in response to that as well. So a lot to keep our eyes on as we're looking at some of the economic indicators. Federal Reserve is central to our strategy. And let's take a look at portfolio performance. As we're looking on page number 17, we have a graph here for you of the performance on the portfolio relative to the benchmark, which we know to be the 1 to 3 year Treasury index. So that's all of the Treasury securities with maturities between 1 and 3 years old. Okay, so there's some clear mismatches between the portfolio and the benchmark. We are able to invest in the portfolio to a 5-year maturity horizon, and we don't sell every security when it falls under a 1-year maturity, right? We let things roll in sometimes to maturity. So Of course, the composition of the portfolio is also different, where we maintain exposure to corporate bonds and agency securities as well. But the portfolio performance, as indicated on this page, has been really quite good. It's a very high quality portfolio. It's built to provide safety, liquidity, and then yield. When we're looking at the performance versus the benchmark, we'll take a little bit of a longer term view. A 3-year look gives us a return of a 479 for the agency versus a 435 for the benchmark, a pickup of over 40 basis points per year. So good return coming in, and the information is provided for you in this format on a regular basis. So you always have a good touch on your current portfolio performance. So the next graph is going to give you a kind of a roadmap as to how we got where we are today on portfolio performance. So again, looking at the Mojave Water portfolio versus the 1 to 3 year Treasury index, this time we're just graphing it on an annual basis, right? So annual numbers, with the exception of 2025, which runs through the end of September, and that is a periodic return only, okay? That is not an annualized number when you're looking at a 444 for Mojave versus a 393 on the index. So really good, solid, positive performance relative to the benchmark, and both the benchmark and the portfolio on track to exceed a 5% return if conditions continue in the way that they have. So the numbers are quite good, but you have to, your eyes just simply must go to 2021 and 22, where you see negative total returns. That's the period of time that I was referring to when the Fed increased interest rates substantially and the value of the securities in the portfolio suffered, right? But we were in a position, because the portfolio was structured with a laddered maturity horizon, that we didn't have to sell anything prior to maturity. There were no credit concerns in the portfolio. We were able to let those securities roll through to maturity. We didn't have to recognize We didn't have to realize any losses in the portfolio. So really, we came out of that really quite good, and the performance, I think, is evident on the page. Another way of looking at performance on this following page is we're going to move into looking at it on a yield basis. Okay, so we do hold a lot of securities to maturity. So considering the purchase yield of the investments is a meaningful metric as well. So on this graph, we're showing you the purchase yield. Okay, you're holding the yield of the securities at the day that you bought it constant, and you're comparing it to the changing yield on the 2-year treasury across time, okay? And you can definitely see in the beginning, 2020 and 21, Mojave is outperforming that 2-year treasury yield. You can see how low those 2-year yields were, getting down into 39 basis points and 27 basis points on average for those entire years. I mean, really low interest rate environment. Thankfully, we've come out of that. Interest rates are rising dramatically. The portfolio is catching up to higher interest rates. This is a great example of the lag in yield performance in fixed income investing as you lock in security yields and the market continues to move. And so now we've crested over, interest rates are starting to come down, the yield on the portfolio is still rising, and we're now in a position where we're outperforming on a yield basis as well as a total return basis. So it's a terrific time to be talking to you about portfolio performance. There's been a lot of much more difficult conversations, I'm sure, that were had in the past when we were in the midst of that total return correction in portfolio pricing. And now we've kind of come out of that. And thankfully, we've been looking to maintain and extend portfolio duration. Okay, the length of the maturity of the investments in the portfolio is our biggest driver of portfolio performance. And with that in mind, when interest rates were quite low, we had our portfolio duration at like 1.5 years, and now we have our duration at 2 years and slightly longer. So that's a meaningful shift in the overall maturity horizon of the portfolio. Still falling within code and policy guidelines, 5-year maximum maturity. Okay? Just a couple of last quickies here for you. On page number 21, portfolio diversification shows you a really broad overview of how the portfolio is structured. But we do have exposure to corporate bonds, is one of the asset classes that we do maintain exposure to. It's 28% of the portfolio as of September 30th. per policy and code, we can maintain up to 30% exposure. We like to keep that pretty full, right? That's a nice source of incremental yield for the portfolio. And the investments are all rated at least single A, also per code and policy, and it's very well diversified. Most of the issues are held with less than a 2% allocation in a variety of names, that many of which you would know and love. And then the other thing on here is just the duration number on the right-hand side. At the bottom of that shows that 1.99 years duration as of September 30th. In addition to the corporate bonds, the portfolio is comprised of U.S. Treasury securities and U.S. agency securities. Okay, very high credit quality. And then the other bit I wanted to share with you on the next page is the maturity distribution. And this is a nice graphic of that duration strategy, right? So we're showing you how the portfolio is structured from a maturity perspective across this five-year horizon that we can invest in. And over 55% of the portfolio has a maturity exceeding 2 years. And almost 80% of the portfolio is extended over the one-year horizon. So that has been really fundamental to what we've been trying to accomplish, is locking in these really attractive yields that we've witnessed over the last few years with duration that will be of the benefit to the portfolio performance in the coming quarters while they hold their value and the two-year Treasury yield continues to do what it's going to do. But we've got a great yield in the portfolio. At this point, the yield in the portfolio is almost 4.3%. So really strong. So that's my good news for today on the portfolio. I'm happy to talk to you more about that with any questions that you may have.
Well, always good to have good news.
Yeah, so. It is good to have good news.
So, we will open up for questions here. Is there Mike?
Yeah, just comment. I noticed in looking at your little bio there that you are from the original firm and that you obviously worked with Dave and
yes.
And that. So really nothing has changed for us. Just we knew there was a new name in that. Now there's a new person, but same philosophy. All that, nothing is going to be seamless for us and how you're managing mm-hmm. the agency's dollars. And
yeah.
Same philosophy is what I'm trying to get at.
100%. Dave and I worked together for decades. We were office mates. He's a good friend, good colleague, and we saw things very similarly. So yes, and I mean, it's all in line with the insight view. I mean, we work together, we're with draw the resources of the firm for the benefit of our clients and our client portfolios. But yeah, my intention is for it to be completely seamless for you folks.
When Director Cox and I were on the board when we made the big change of coming from what the state of California offered, and we wanted to be able to do better, and I'm just speaking for myself, but I think I'm speaking for everyone who was on the board at that time and now, that you guys have done a great job. It was a very good move for us, but as we all know, it's performance, but it's also about relationships, and I want to make sure that we continue that relationship. So
I appreciate that very much. We are grateful for the business. It has been a pleasure working with you folks over the years. And although I haven't had the benefit of being before you personally, again, I was Dave's backup for years. And so
you knew our portfolio.
I felt pretty familiar with it. So yeah, I've
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. First question is on this slide. We've got the bars that are under 90 days and go out to 1 year. As those began to close out, is your recommendation that we flip those to a five-year investment, or where do you think we're going to go with that?
We still think that there's value in the five-year space. The five-year is trading at this point at about a 370 in a treasury, and our forecasts are for that to be coming down closer to a 340, 350 kind of level. So the market has gotten a little ahead of itself on pricing and expectations for the Federal Reserve to continue to ease. We think that that's going to play out, but in general, the duration is the key, and we want to maintain that. So we have to keep pushing on those longer-term investments to maintain that strong base of performance.
So next time we see this, we can anticipate probably all three of those bars having been flipped to the five-year. as they mature, right?
True. But it, in the meantime, the rest of the portfolio will be rolling down, so the graph will look probably somewhat similar, right? We can actively look at realigning assets. That two-year duration is an extension to the benchmark. We are long the benchmark, and that's really the firm's view, is to maintain that longer-term exposure. But with our kind of our 1 to 3 year benchmark horizon, there are risk management moments that go along with that. We don't want to just go hog wild on it and just push completely far out on the durations,
right?
Because interest rates do back up. Mm-hmm. Okay, even when the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 25 basis points this last time, it was deemed to be a hawkish cut because Chair Powell in his conference said, oh, and by the way, the next cut in December is not a foregone conclusion. So the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates 25 basis points and the two-year Treasury yield rises, right? So this risk management component of it is so important, and we just have to be mindful of where we are in the cycle.
But I agree with Mike. This was an excellent move for us way back when. And I remember like 2 years ago, maybe three, when Dave was here and we were down to like the 2 year time frame for our assets, and we made a conscious decision to kind of ladder out those investments over a longer horizon. So I'm glad to see that that is still, you know, your recommendation, that we capitalize on that 5 year space. The second question I had was on page 15 of the chart. You were talking about the interest rates at about 3%. You said that was the normal range. What does that do with the mortgage interest rate? I'm not sure that I understand the connection between, you know, the market rates and the mortgage rates.
Okay. I'm stumbling a little bit on what I might have said, what suggesting that 3 was the normal level. I think 3 is what the market is pricing in expectations to reach. They're pricing in another 325 basis point cuts to get us to 3, which is kind of viewed as being a neutral level of the Fed funds rate.
Neutral.
A rate which neither stimulates nor restricts economic activity. Prior to this post-COVID thing, the neutral level was 2%. So there's a neutral level, and that's in response to recognition of some fundamental increase in inflationary pressures, okay? It's just natural, right? So 3% might be the neutral rate. How that translates to mortgage rates is really tricky because the Fed is on the front end of the yield curve and mortgage rates are driven off of the 10-year treasury rates. So the Fed cannot fundamentally impact those 10-year rates the way they can the short end. And honestly, sometimes they can't even really do what they want to do on the short end. So it's really difficult for them to manage that longer-term exposure, and that's where the mortgage rates are driven from. You're going to see the long end of the yield curve respond to inflation conditions and expectations and growth expectations. And growth in the U.S. economy has been better than people had been expecting. Okay, the GDP numbers coming out for the first half of the year were stronger than people had expected. So that leads to that little uptick on the long end, that positively shaped yield curve. So,
thank you, because I know for those of us in the Inland Empire, the housing pressures are real, and mm-hmm. you know, the interest rate drives our growth. Out here. So, yeah. Thank you so much. That's all I had.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Wonderful.
And forward to the next update.
Thank you very much.
That brings us to item 7, adopt board actions from regular meeting on October 23rd.
Go to the item number 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. I went too far. 6, discussion regarding potential adoption of mitigative negative declaration, monitoring and reporting plan for the East Breche Recharge Facility Project.
Thank you. We can go right to Melody for this.
Oh, right to Mel.
All right. Good morning. Yeah, so the purpose of this discussion this morning is to receive board and public comments on the ISMND. which is in accordance with the timing that was represented in the notice of intent. So the public period is open for the ISM&D, and so I'll quickly go through a brief on the project description, a little bit about the timing that happened, and then some next steps for actually adopting this. So the East Ames Recce Recharge Basin Project description, so this is, we are in the process of engineering and finalizing that engineering design on the development of two recharge basins, a north and a south basin, which will be approximately 4.8 acres in size on a 10-acre parcel owned by Mojave Water Agency. This includes a 6-foot-tall perimeter fencing with barbed wire to keep people out of the recharge facility. A new T connection will be built into the existing pipeline, and then a nested or multi-completion monitoring well to monitor infiltration, groundwater levels, and water quality will also be drilled. And the proposed improvements allow MWA to increase groundwater recharge capacity at the location. So the notice of intent was published with the county or put out on the county back in September. And so the public period is open now. So in September 17th, this was published, and the public review period was open just a few days prior as we were working on that. And the notice of intent said that today we would hear that public hearing. So we are agendizing this item so that we can hear public comment now. And then we will also be hearing it again in December at the board meeting when we aim to adopt this. So as a reminder, this project does have DWR approved grant funding for the construction of this basin and the monitoring well. The design and environmental completion, this is an internal deadline that we gave ourselves, which is the end of this year to complete the environmental. And then the construction completion is a DWR deadline for the end of December of 2026, and we are currently on target for those deadlines. So today, we are inviting public comment for this item in relation to the notice of intent. And then on December 11th, we will also allow an additional opportunity for public comment and have a formal public hearing to then adopt it. And we have started the Western Joshua Tree permitting, and we can't move forward with that until we adopt that process. So with that, I'll take any questions.
First, Latrice, do we have any public comment on this item?
No.
Discussion? All right, well, forward to it in on which?
Next month.
December 11th.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll move on to item 7, adopt board actions from regular meeting.
I'll make the motion.
Motion page. I'll second it.
No, I was just looking to see if somebody else wanted to second it.
All right.
I'm sorry, who was the second?
I did.
Okay, thank you. Director Page?
Yes.
Director Ramirez?
Yes.
Director Cox? Director Limbaugh?
Yes.
President Raleigh?
Aye. All right, item 8, consider authorization of payment to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife for the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act incidental take permit for the West A Recharge Basin Project Permit 1927.
Thanks, and we can... Well, I'll briefly introduce. This is one of our favorite topics as a recent history. The Joshua Tree, much of our sites and much of the discussion, even the discussion about work on East Ames Recce, likely includes some Joshua Tree on the site that needs to be cleared and moved. And so this is one of the first kind of end results of one of our planning works and what we need to do to move forward with the project. And so for OSTA, we're prepared, at least, to move forward with your authorization to pay our costs and be able to move forward on the project. And with that, Melody, if you want to describe that.
Yeah, so we have been in a long process with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife on the Western Joshua Tree related to the OSDA property. So a quick background is, if you recall, in April of 2022, the CDFW submitted the Western Joshua Tree status review to the California Department of Fish and Game Commission to evaluate the species status as an endangered or threatened species. And then by July of 2023, the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act was passed, and that prohibited the import, export, take, possession, purchase, or sale of any Western Joshua Tree in California unless authorized by CDFW. So it opened the door for the permitting process that we're going through today. And then December 31st of 2024, they had a conservation plan that they needed to work on. Since this, in August, they have approved the conservation plan. There was some back and forth between December, May, June, April. There were some hearings that the commission held that we provided comment on, if you recall. And so they have adopted that plan. And so we were working with Fish and Game, asking questions about our project on what this means for the process. And some of those changes actually made its way through for the guidelines. Some not so much. Anyways, in a nutshell, this is the map which shows the fee area in our region for the Western Joshua Tree and our project. So the blue area is the reduced fee area, and the not blue area, the yellow area, is the standard fee area. And our project site is in the standard fee area. We have approximately 201 trees on that site. It's a 10-acre parcel. And this site was surveyed. The entire project site, including the buffer area, was surveyed. At the time we were working with CDFW, there was some back and forth about how big to make the buffer area, if you recall. And so it was surveyed within the 50-foot buffer area. And the entire project site was surveyed on foot. The trees were measured, GPSed, and photographed, and that included dead trees, which was a requirement of CDFW to include those in the census. And then they had to be categorized, and there was just some back and forth with Fish and Game on the accuracy of, is this 7 trees, is it 10 trees, things like that. There was back and forth on this. So we were kind of the guinea pigs on some of this with CDFW, and we were working alongside with them on some of this. So a quick summary, there's 3 classifications of trees depending on the size of the tree, and the breakdown is on your screen in that chart. And then the cost per tree is also broken down. So the total trees of 201 trees comes out to a total fee of $100,342.50.
Those are all live, right?
They do charge 4 dead ones as well.
Are those on that list?
Yes.
No discount for a dead one?
No discount.
Really?
Yes. So we did submit the application for this project twice. We submitted it once in September of 2024 when we were working with CDFW, and then we were asked to resubmit it again in July of 2025. So we did do that. And then CDFW reviewed the application and requested a relocation plan. So there was some back and forth on if they were going to ask us for a relocation plan or not. And they have asked us for a relocation plan and a payment for the incidental take permit. So I got some clarification that the relocation plan does not need to be approved or finalized prior to CDFW accepting the payment. And the payment will go up after the new year. So that's why this is timely now. And the relocation plan has been started. We did identify a parcel that MWA does own that we don't foresee using in the near future, that's kind of in that general location, but not close to the aqueduct, not close to any other infrastructure. And so we are looking to relocate to that location unless we find something else in the interim. So we're still exploring that. So under the terms of the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act, CDFW is required to adjust their fees after the new year. This is an estimated 3% increase that will take effect after the new year. So just as a quick, the opinion of probable cost for this project is estimated between $8.3 million and $12.5 million. So the cost of this ITP is approximately 1% of the total anticipated project cost.
Take permit doesn't include the actual work that needs to be done.
Correct. It does not include that.
So it's just a fee?
It's just an in-lieu fee that the CDFW is charging in order to move forward with this, as the species is considered species of concern.
And I know you spent a lot of time trying to get this correct. A lot of projects getting rid of Joshua.
Yeah.
Other than Marina's project in Maine.
Yeah, there's a couple projects in the Morongo area that are moving forward.
Do they offer an option of compensatory lands where you can buy land that's got Joshua trees on it? They don't do that?
No, they're not offering that as part of the new process.
Do we know why that wasn't an option pursued by Fish and Wildlife?
I don't have that information.
Expectation is that at some point that market may settle, that may make sense, but this is so new and they're still developing.
The desert tortoise. I mean, with the desert tortoise to buy on the preserve worked really good. Of course, it's also a living thing.
Yeah, I don't think there is any driver for them to implement good common sense things right now, and so they have all the time in the world, and that's what we're seeing. And
dealt with, we're knowledgeable of the Joshua tree?
That's a loaded question, Mike. They've made visits down here. They have worked with the locals. I mean, part of us reaching out to them, they did make effort to start engaging more with the locals.
Since the turn of 2000, there's been a lot of areas in the high desert where they just bulldozed Joshua trees. Now we've got the flip side where you got to pay $150,000 for nothing. Doesn't get them moved, doesn't get them saved, just pay the state. Yep. We need to get that changed.
So the fiscal impact for this, for the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act incidental take permit for the OSA project, it will be a one-time payment of $100,343.50. This specific permit fee was an unknown cost and was not itemized in the fiscal year 2026 budget. My estimates on this were pretty close, actually. I overestimated when I originally did my initial calculations. But at the time the budget was built, those were not considered here. The funds will be reallocated from the capital improvement budgeted OSA demonstration recharge pilot phase one project number 0567. Potential additional costs for the relocation will be brought to the committee and the board for discussion. The cost, I think, for relocating the trees, there's two different methods. There's the tree spade method, and there's another method that I'm not recalling off the top of my head right now, and the cost on those can vary as well. One of them is a specialized way to relocate the tree, and the other is not so specialized. So it just depends on how we choose to relocate those trees. So staff recommends that the board of directors authorize the payment of $100,343.50 to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife for the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act incidental take permit for the West A Recharge Project permit number 1927 ITP 2024-06906.
Discussion?
Yes.
Questions? Go ahead, Mike.
Call it the Western Joshua Tree. Is there an Eastern West Joshua Tree?
My understanding is there is an Eastern Joshua Tree.
So it's specific to our area here, Western Joshua Tree.
Yeah, so you'll see that the Eastern ones, my understanding, is more out towards Utah and the Eastern side of the Mojave Preserve.
Enlighten me about the buffer area. Are they just identified and we have to pay a fee for them, but we don't have to relocate them?
Correct. Yeah, that's one of the changes that they introduced.
Thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the buffer area is determined by area of disturbance?
The buffer area has changed over the course of this, and it's a 50-foot buffer.
So there are words in the Protection Act that describe what the buffer area entails, or is it a moving target?
it's a moving target. So the Conservation Act just establishes the process for this in-lieu payment process for the ITP, and then those guidelines are under the separate, they're in the conservation plan and the incidental take, I'm sorry, Western Joshua Tree guidelines for relocation.
Being that it's only 1% of the total project cost, it's not horrific. If you add the relocation fees in, let's say it gets up to 5%, that's still not a horrible mitigating factor. Where do we relocate the trees to?
They have identified in their guidelines some specifications on relocation, and this includes, I believe, a 20-mile buffer for relocating. If we can find willing participants to take it, they're preferring that. They're currently working on their process to help folks find lands. That was one of the things that we've been working with them on. I did reach out to BLM, the Conservation Mojave Desert Land Trust, a couple different entities to ask questions about if they're willing to accept any of these trees. I have not heard any responses on that. So our next best option is to identify land that we own and relocate them there, or change the complete design of our project and potentially risk a double mitigation payment for those trees.
So we'll need authorization
I was so hoping Marina would be here because just waiting for her engagement on this. I know she has dealt with the trials and travails of this and making comments against this. To me, this is just environmental blood money. It's just morally wrong. We have always been such good stewards in the projects that we have done, relocating the most viable Joshua trees and to other places. You know, we're good environmental stewards. And this is just painful. It's like getting hit with friendly fire. Really, really bad public policy. I can't let this go by without stating that fact. There is absolutely no benefit, zero benefit to the environment with this payment of $100,000, nor to the people of the state of California for this. And I am very concerned about the private property owners that own property that just happen to have Joshua trees on them. I mean, this is like, you know, inverse condemnation. It's just such a bad policy. So that's my commentary. Then on a practical side, I think we should be able to use biofund money for this $100,000. Has anybody? Sounds like Marina on the phone.
I know it does.
Is there any way we could use biofund money? This is a water project. We're doing the environmentally right thing. CDFW pay for this fee with their own bio funds if they think it's such an important thing.
We can shuffle that suggestion their way. I know they direct the spending of that money, but I think it's a fair point. So we'll relay that.
I think we should let them pay their own fee. That's the end of my commentary. Thank you.
So once we move the trees, how long are we responsible for them? Are we responsible forever, or how's that work?
They've been changing those guidelines. My last recollection was we're responsible for them for 3 years of monitoring and making, like, we have to monitor the trees, make sure. And my understanding was at the time we had to water them as well, but monitoring them and just seeing which ones take and which ones survive. So that's my understanding, was for 3 years we have to do that.
Authorization, we need a motion.
I'll move.
Limbaugh.
Second
by Kimberly.
As long as you add that we request that CDFW pay for this out of
add
their
that
bio fund.
To the motion, yes.
Thank you.
So moved.
I apologize. Can you tell me who motioned and second, please?
The motion was to authorize.
Authorize payment, but we're also going to recommend that we try to get funding from the state.
Using the biofund.
Biofund.
Latrice, it was Limba made the motion and Cox seconded it.
Thank you. Director Page?
Yes.
Director Ramirez?
Yes.
Director Cox? Director Limba?
Yes.
President Raleigh?
Aye. All right. Thank you. Item 9, manager reports, engineering operations finance.
My only report is I was distracted at the board clerk during that last vote, so I take ownership of having her ask you for clarification on that vote. But other than that, no reports.
Okay, thanks. Legal report, Steve?
No report at this time, though we do have a closed session.
All right. Directors' reports, anyone? Mike Page.
Yeah, I just want to encourage everyone, when we have an event, to be able to attend. Charlene spoke at the last VMI, and as I mentioned last time, it used to be at all these that virtually every director, and I'm not asking Marina to come, but Jim Ventura many times would come, not all the time, but I think it's really important when our staff are out there or there's something in a particular city, whether it's the one we represent or not, and I just don't know if there's a way to get calendarized months in advance for our board members, but it used to be really a good way to get the MWA out there where it wasn't just staff, but it was the board members out there and being seen. And it's very good for us to be seen in the community where people actually know that we represent them. Many times people forget the Mojave Water Agency even exists. So it's important for board members to be out. So I just ask that staff help us. And where we know things coming up 2-3 months in advance, and as I said, we used to get little cues on a regular basis from different members of the staff, whether it be the from Charlene's department, it was Yvonne at the time, or from the general manager reminding us, or especially from the clerk, just regular reminders because we tend to be forgetful
and busy.
And busy. Did you want to add anything to that, Director Cox? Because I know you've been an ally on with me about that.
No, I just think it's important for us to get out there as the electeds and be active. VMI is a great group. You've got a lot of leadership there from both the business community and the government community. So if you haven't been, it would be really good if we do a presentation or a sponsor at any future ones that we try to get there. And the reminders are so helpful because you live in your calendar every day, and we as board members get these occasional couple times a month reminders. So please remind us frequently. Thank you. And I did have something else. So, this is our last board meeting before Thanksgiving, and I just think it's important with all the chaos going on in the world around us, you know, the unrest that we see, the social anxieties that we see exhibited on a daily basis. It's so important for us to take just that time of reflection and be thankful for all that we have, our jobs, our coworkers, our opportunities to serve, our, you know, our wealth, our health, our family. Just don't lose sight of that and don't get caught up in the chaos around us, because we are so blessed and we have so much to be thankful for. So happy Thanksgiving.
Comment. Thank you. And I think we do have tonight the essay contest at 5 p.m. I will be there giving an opening statement to how many participants do we have? Oh, great. Great. So anybody can make it at 5. It's 5 p.m., correct?
5 o'clock.
Right here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any discussion for future agenda items? All right. Okay, that brings us to closed session. So, Steve, we'll see you in closed session.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, great. Okay, we're back from close, and there is nothing to report, which brings us to adjournment. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving.